Everybody, welcome to Weekly Manga Recap. It is August the 9th of 2017. I'm Nick. He's Chris. We're going to talk about manga today.
I am Chris. And Nick, I have big news.
Okay.
The one class I was taking ended. Just finished today.
Yeah.
So now, I don't have to do any more reports on millennials. Nick, there's a very good likelihood I may never have to say the word millennial again in my life.
Okay.
And I'd be so happy if that's the case. Because
I
don't think there's a word in the language that can upset me more. You could call my mother a whore, Nick, and I would not be as upset if you brought up the idea of just discuss millennials. In any context, discuss millennials. And I just think I feel the aneurysm starting in the back of my head.
So today's topic is how millennials relate to manga.
Oh.
Friendship over.
there's a legitimate fear I sometimes have that as, you know, we get older and our mind starts to decay a little bit, we don't make the same kind of logical connections of our thoughts and you know, memories as we do when we're younger. And there's this fear in my mind that if I start to go insane or just, you know, I start to lose my head, that the memory I'm going to jump back to is me sitting in my basement staring at a computer screen on paper 2 of 3 that I have to write for that night and just staring into the space, like stating over and over again as I try to write in my head, millennials are conflicted. Millennials are complicated and they're fuck! And just screaming at everything for like 10 hours as I'm like, I hate the word millennials! So, I don't want to hear that word ever again. I'm very happy. I hopefully won't. And this is when, like, the mayor of Harrisburg's like, we're renaming Harrisburg to Millennialsburg. All of you are going to be known as Millennial Knights. I'm just like, oh.
Well, I made a millennial joke on Twitter that was really stupid, and people seemed to really love it. So
it took me so long to figure out that joke, too, because I just kept saying, I was like, that's a kind of a cool premise. Like, the millennium items are out doing, like, all these different things and fucking up industries, and it took me, like, 10 times before I was like, oh, millennial items. Fuck you. And I got angry then.
And then you blocked me on Twitter.
Yeah. I was like, I can't. Oh, fuck Nick.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, but we're going to be talking about manga today.
Not talking about millennials, I'll tell you that.
No Akinohana yet. We need a little bit more time on that. Preparing for Sadistic September. It's coming, man.
Are you having like the shakes? like you're going through withdrawal for something you haven't even started yet?
Yeah, withdrawal of not having to read Prince of Tennis. So, we're going to be just going straight into the recap portion. We can like recap this week, starting off with a chapter that I did not really connect with the first time that I read it, I will admit.
I've been hearing this from a lot of people in our chat room too. There was a very long discussion before the show started about people saying that they really couldn't understand this chapter and it was messy on a technical level. So I'm kind of curious. This is definitely, it seems like a much discussed chapter and its ability to be read clearly.
So it's probably going to take a little while because it covers a lot of different things, a lot of which is character development-y stuff. So it's number 148 of My Hero Academia, The Anguish of Young Touga. Last time, Twice and Touga stepped into the fray. They managed to disable Rocklock and also injure Aizawa. Touga's got, I think, both of their blood now. Yes, she does, because she transformed into Rocklock. So she has both their blood, and I believe also Deku's blood. I think she's got his blood from a previous encounter.
I don't know if she does. I know she has Uraraka's blood.
She's got Uraraka's. She, of course, has the girl that she disguised herself as. Yeah, I guess you're right. I don't think that she ever actually successfully got Deku's blood.
I'm not positive. I feel like that was a plot point of the camp invasion. But I can't remember what the result of it was. So
I know she was hoping to get it, but I don't think she did. So we got back to where Deku is with Aizawa and they're in pretty bad shape because Aizawa's injured, Rock Lock is down. And Aizawa's thinking to himself, geez, I didn't think that any of us would actually get taken down on this mission. We were really careless and underestimated the group we were going up against. Gu has a bit of an epiphany of like, hey, the girl transformed all slimy like, might be clony girl from the test. Maybe. Deku's not the smartest person in the world. We cut over to where Twice is attacking Night Eye with a clone of Rappa. And Night Eye proceeds to kick the clone's ass. Just does a leg sweep and takes him down. Then knocks him into the far wall, and there's this great reaction shot because it goes straight by Twice, and then his Twice looks like,
like, oh my.
This is bad. What Nice did was he used a special high-density personal seal, a support item just for battle. It weighs about 5. It fits my salaryman image, making the whole thing quite humorous. Read their moves and strike first. I've viewed so many people's futures in my time that when it comes to close combat, at least, I'm always a bit faster. But even I couldn't foresee this. To think that the Almighty League of Villains would team up with mere Yakuza. And he's got these small but really heavy weights held between his fingers that I guess he uses like projectiles.
And yeah, they're, his shirts. They're stamps. They're seals. Because he mentions it fitting with his salaryman.
Right.
Gimmick. I like that he actually actively acknowledges like purchasing items for the sense
like
of
it. Stamped.
Yeah.
Or did not stamp Deku's. His shirt's been torn away to reveal that he is insanely ripped underneath his suit. Yeah, so apparently Tsunade is actually a really big badass instead of just a support hero. There you go. Twice his clone of Rappa fades away, and so he's immediately like, well, shit, these Yakuza guys suck. Night Eye throws more stamps, which almost hit Twice, and they, in fact, tear away part of his mask, so he decides to run. Understandable. Irinaka seals his escape route so that he can get away successfully, and then Twice starts to panic because his mask has been torn away. And he's, of course, really upset about the situation that he's in. He starts to split, and then Toga comes up to him and ties a little rag around his face, so that it covers up the torn part of his mask. And, she basically says, like, oh yeah, you know, being covered up keeps you whole, right? So she knows him well enough to understand that his deal with that. It's actually a cool little moment between them at first that shows, you know, a little bond between them. And she then proceeds to give him essentially a pep talk after that. Meanwhile, Irinaka is like, oh, fuck these guys and their stupid villain lines, crazy, you know. And Toga really just kind of gets down to, like, hey, I think I know what you're going through with all of this. You know, you feel responsible for us being in this situation because you think that you're responsible for Big Sis Mag getting killed. But look, you've got Endor. We're going to have to help these guys out. I know it sucks. But hey, if this doesn't work, then we'll never get our revenge. Meanwhile, Irinaka can hear all this going on. It's like, oh, so, yeah, let's just openly discuss we're only helping these people so we can get our revenge on them. Because they're all kind of crazy. So we get a flashback to when the Villain Alliance was having a meeting where they decided, or Shigaraki rather, told them that they were going to cooperate with the Hasekai. And he says, look, okay, they've got this big plan going on. Still not going to tell you what it was that was discussed and the discussion I had 40 chapters ago, or whatever the hell it was. But you gotta trust me on this. It's really big, so I want us to get close to them. So, Toga and Twice, you're gonna join the Yakuza for today. So, and Shigaraki actually says, yeah, they want to have Kurigiri too, but I was like, no, no.
A small little piece of this, though, just to bring up, is in the shot, the first initial shot, you can see the entire group, and I think it's the first time we've seen Dobby back actually with the League of Villains.
Yeah, just chilling out in the bed.
Yeah, so we get confirmation he's back. I don't know if it was ever really in question, per se, but we just hadn't seen him in any of the villain League of Villains scenes in a while, so.
Mm-hmm. Too busy burning criminals alive.
Exactly. Doing what he does best.
Mm-hmm. So, Shigaraki essentially is acting like, okay, meeting over, you know, get to work. But Twice says, hey, come on. What's going on here? Like, why'd you let him sweet talk you into this deal? They killed Mag. They destroyed Mr. Compress's arm. Apparently he hasn't gotten that arm back. It's just gone forever. And he's just walking around with the bandage around his stump. He seems pretty chill about it, though.
Well, I mean, he could be grimacing like nobody's business. We can't see. He's wearing a mask.
Get that mask on. Or maybe under there, he's just like, oh, well, I'm still dressed dapper as fuck, so I'm fine.
He's like, a gentleman doesn't need two arms to tip his hat.
So, but yeah, Twice says, look, this guy tricked me. He got me to carelessly lead him into our group. And, you know, I'm only human here, Shigaraki. And he takes off his mask while he does this for a moment. You can see that he's got a scar going down the middle of his head, which leads me to believe that, I don't know, because I know we've seen him before, but I forget if we've actually seen his face in this much detail before.
No, I don't believe we've actually seen his face this way. But I think also what I recall about Twice is that he's basically, like, losing his mind. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't be shocked if that's, like, a self-inflicted scar to give himself the sense of security that he's stitched up.
Hmm. There's a whole bunch of different theories that you could throw at this. For example, people who have a separation between the halves of their brain have trouble processing certain things together. It could be a matter of maybe he is actually literally coming apart when he can't control himself. Who knows?
Oh, people are saying a clone did it, so I guess we actually did find out about that.
Oh, yeah, right. When he cloned himself, they fought each other, and he still doesn't know if he's the real one or not. That's right. Forgot about that. So, Toga has this to say, look, hey, I'm here, you know, just because the League helps me feel good. And Stainy was my real inspiration. And he says, she says, I want to live however I feel like in this world of ours. And the first step is figuring out if that's even possible. And she's does this weird kind of like playful dancing around and then holding up a knife to him. I don't know if I want Toga to ever be my friend or enemy. She seems like she just stabbed everyone.
I mean, is this the first time you've come to this conclusion?
No,
like,
no.
Okay, I was going to say, like, to this point, you were pretty okay with her. Is you're like, I'm going to give her my social security number.
Here you go.
the keys to my house. Like, come by whenever you want.
So, Shigaraki, in order to make his point, in order to convince them to do this, he takes his face hand off. And is like, you're doing this for me and for all of us. Those idiots are hoping to slow down the League and win you two over because of how useful you both are. They're tunneling in from the outside and trying to take over. I knew they were never about equality in this team up. Twice. Remember when you said someone had to pay? This is one way I'm going to make that happen. I believe in you. So, essentially what's going on is, no, we're not actually planning to collaborate with them. I don't know.
There's a sense of difficulty in exactly understanding what the two individuals in the League of Villains are meant to do. We're obviously knowing that they're agreeing to this. You're going in. You're helping these guys. And the exact thing they're planning to do is unclear. But I think we're supposed to get the sense they were supposed to kind of just go in and antagonize the shit out of them. Like, that's the only purpose they seem to do. Because they wasted no time shitting all over Mimic. Like,
absolutely
just
not.
Immediately. Like, in that scene where even Toko comes up and wraps up Twice's face. She's already turning over to the side and, like, looking towards the wall where Mimic is supposedly watching from and just talking about, like, man, it's going to suck when you guys fail. We have to get our revenge or something like that. And I guess that's their plan, is just to cause a lot of mischief and from that basically make it hard for Overhaul to get a clean escape.
Which, I don't know, it's kind of weird because Twice was fighting against Nida and Toga successfully took down Rocklock and Aizawa. So,
I mean, I guess they had to do something. They couldn't literally just walk into the building and be like, hey, shitheads! Hey, douchebags! Hey, knuckleheads! Get out of here! You guys suck! You're dumb! You're stupid all and dumb! But they took the first opportunity they had of being essentially alone to start doing it. Like, they didn't wait for some significant piece of the puzzle to come into place. Not like they were like, Mimic's down, now let's start fucking things up or something like that. Like, nothing's changed in the scenario outside of, I guess, maybe immobilizing Rocklock and Aizawa. Like, maybe that's what their purpose was to do, to, like, inconvenience those two since they're huge pieces of this police force. But outside of that, we still don't really have the context for exactly what they're trying to do, but the implication seems to be that they are going at this to just be an instigating unit and to try to create chaos. Perhaps they could be more explicit with that, because it's tough to tell if that's what their plan is or that's just what Toga and Twice would do. Like, they might not be following the plan at all. They're both very chaotic people. And I can see where that causes comprehension issues. The big issue I've had reading this chapter is I really think that Horikoshi Sensei needed to kind of establish Mimic and his face a lot more. Because there's several times that they just cut to that shot of his face, and I didn't know what was happening at first. I was trying to figure out, I was like, is that supposed to be Shigarashi's fake? Is that supposed to be Twice? Who's grimacing at? Oh, it's Mimic. Oh, okay. Like, I think if there had just been a few more panels in previous chapters in Spanish, like, what his face looks like when he's doing the wall thing, I might have caught on to that a bit more. But, yeah, I can see where people find this chapter tough to read on a technical level.
And we get a moment where essentially Twice and Toga are, like, determined to go through with the plan. So Twice is just thinking to himself, I've just got to be the best I can be. And Toga's like, and I just got to be myself. Which is ironic, of course, because she mimics other people. And then they just start, like, shouting at the walls. They're like, yeah, because it suck. Your old bedroom boss is going to die. You're not going to do anything successfully. And immediately, Mimic is just like, fuck everything. Just the entire hallway that they're in distorts and turns into, like, liquidy waves. He's like, I'm going to pulverize all of you. And that's where the chapter ends, is with the entire hallway around them rupturing. And convulsing.
Yeah, so I think that's the best clue you get. That's their plan, is them saying, like, hey, we're going to be pals with you, whether you like it or not, heroes. So clearly they're here just to be, I think, antagonistic towards the Overhaul's group. And I guess the mild amount of compliance they put forth before was just their way of seeming like they were part, like, you know, following the plan.
I guess.
I want to see how that chess match went. Because essentially, like, I want to see if essentially, like, you know, Overhaul did his turn and Shigaraki was like, time to do a metaphorical representation of my plan. Yes, pawns are very important. Oops, I slapped the board off the table. Like, that's what his people are doing. Just, like, just do whatever. Just fuck things up. I believe in you guys. Just go nuts.
Overhaul's like, pawns are very important. You have to know how to place them, and then they can become more important pieces. And Shigaraki's like, yes, they are very important. For my first move, he just grabs Overhaul's rook and throws it away.
He just takes a gun out and starts shooting the board. He's like, interesting strategy. I like this. There's a humorous tone to this in my mind because I don't know about you. Do you believe it in any way, shape, or form there's any real sense of, like, community in the League of Villains?
A little bit. I think it's just that they all kind of work together because they're all fucking crazy.
Like, but do you think, like, Sugar Rocky legitimately cares about any of
them? Oh, absolutely not.
Okay. So, like, this one panel where he pulls his hand away from his face, and it's, like, the first time we've seen that face is like, a soft expression.
Isn't this the face of someone that you would trust and love?
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't buy this. Come on, dude. You have the powers for all for one. I don't believe you're an altruistic person.
The last time you made this face at someone was because you were going to essentially eat Deku.
Yeah, but no, I think this chapter's fine. I guess I need to see how this all plays out, because it's a part of my mind. It's just like, certainly wasn't that crazy of a plan. Like, you were like,
no.
Guys, infiltrate and then just start pissing people off. Like, I want like a shot of like, you see like Rappa's about to get his coffee and like he starts to pull it like out of the pot and like a trap goes off and a bunch of sugar falls into it. He's like, I don't like this much sugar. Ah! He just starts punching people around him and like twice is in the back and like. By the way, did we want to discuss vigilantes at all?
I didn't actually read this.
All right, well, we won't discuss them, but I'll throw out there. So if you guys are curious, there's a spin-off series to My Hero, which is a bit strange to me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a spin-off series.
Pretty young, yeah.
Yeah. Called Vigilantes, and mm-hmm. it's based on the idea of a group of characters who are actively vigilantes in the traditional sense. They're people who operate outside of the law but still do heroics. And it's a little bit more of a mature-based series than My Hero. It's not explicitly like a more gory thing or anything like that, but it definitely deals with a little bit more adult themes and a little bit more brutality to it, especially the main, well, not the main character, but the All Might-esque character in it is basically something right out of like 90s Marvel, where it's just like absurdly super muscular, like, you know, 5 o'clock shadow, you know, fucking like no eyeballs. Like, it's essentially like if you were like, I want to make Wolverine but taller and a little bit buffer, you're like, all right, let's put some spiked shoulder pads on this guy and we could just say we made him in 1996.
Give him a chain with a hook on the end.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you got all that stuff in there. It's interesting. And if you want to check it out, it's for free. You can get it on shonenjump.com. They're going to be releasing new chapters, I think, relatively frequently to get it caught up to where the series is. And then, you know, they're going to keep going from there. And this is something I just realized. I'm dumb and didn't realize this. But if you want to follow, like, get updates and know when any of these series that Shonen Jump releases for free on the site come out, you can actually, if you go to that page that has all the chapters listed, you can choose to follow it and they'll send you email updates when a new chapter comes out. So, go check that out. It's a completely free thing. As long as you have Shonen Jump in your area, you can get it. No strings attached.
Sweet.
Oh, all right, your soul. Sorry, you sell your soul. But outside of that, you're good everywhere.
Hello! It's too late, I've purchased.
Oh!
Look, tiny little disclaimer at the bottom. No refunds. You cannot unfollow. All right, well, since we don't have Fairy Tale anymore, we are instead just going to go straight into Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma. Alright, so it is, let's see, chapter 226 of the series that we're going over now. When they all assemble. Last time, Soma was finishing up his sushi dish, presented it to the judges. They call it the ultimate bite-sized maguro sushi plate. It's tiny little bite-sized bits of sushi, and each of the bits of sushi is a different type of sushi.
Nick, do you like sushi at all?
I do like certain types of sushi, yes.
Okay, interesting.
So I'm sure that I would probably like at least one of the things that he set out. Probably not all of them, though.
He's like, every one made with the most pure and delicious chocolate filling. You're like, why?
So that's how he does his dessert dish.
He's like, I'm actually a dessert sushi specialist.
Oh, fucker.
Not interpretively, though. I just make sushi into desserts. Not like, oh, well, the fish will be vanilla or something. Like, no, it's fish.
No, it tastes awful. It is, as much as I attempt to craft it together, it is still tuna that has been slathered in, I don't know, fucking sprinkles and
nonpareils and shit.
There's a graham cracker in there, you know. And they look over and observe that Miyosaka, of course, has finished basically the same thing. But, oh, no, wait. There is an additional piece of sushi. A gunkanmaki. Whatever the fuck that is.
It means battleship, Mick.
Yeah.
Battleship. What's maki mean? Fish, right? Isn't that a maki,
yes,
a fish? So, battleship,
yes,
fish. Yeah. So it's a... Nick, it's War Fortress or Whale Fortress from Yu-Gi-Oh! Remember? That awful ritual
Fortress
card?
Whale.
Yeah, there you go. It's Fortress
that
Whale.
Thing that has you tribute 7 stars worth of monsters in order to summon a monster that has 2,350 attack. And for whatever reason, that was like Mako Tsunami's big ace monster in his battle with Joey.
You blew us away with that.
Like that's his ace monster, is that shitty fucking card. What were the other ace monsters that Joey had to go up against in that tournament?
He had Jinzo, which was great.
Jinzo was a great card.
Jinzo
was one
amazing.
Of the best cards from that era.
And then
Yu-Gi-Oh.
It went right into Insect Queen, who's just flat awful. She's terrible.
If you didn't have to tribute a monster in order to attack with her, it would be fine.
Yeah.
But you do. But even so, that's better than fucking Fortress Whales.
And there's a moment when you're like, well, what if Joey got the Legendary Fisherman instead? I'm like, I guess the Legendary Fisherman.
He did get the Legendary Fisherman instead.
Man, I guess that's slightly better then. That's still an awful card.
Mika was just like, here, have this card that represents the dead soul of my father.
Pick one of my shitty cards. It's like, you have so many. How was this a challenge? I was losing to you.
Thank God I had that one equip spell that powers down water monsters.
I teched against your deck knowing I'd face you. Go fuck yourself, Mako. He's like, you're a real shit, Joey. Ha ha.
God, Joey's duels in Duelist Kingdom were so weird.
In Duelist Kingdom?
In Battle City, my mistake.
Battle City, I like though, because it's such
a
weird.
He lucked out all the time in all of his duels anyway, but he just seriously just like, it's a good thing that I happen to be packing this card that's completely immune to whatever card you're using. Oh, yeah, Gearfreed the Iron Knight. Yeah, he's immune to being turned into an insect. No, he's not. That's a fucking lie. He can't be equipped with equip spells. He would still be affected by the DNA surge, by the parasite, and insect barrier combo. So fuck yourself, Joey. I'm sorry.
Nick's like, hold on.
I'm going to get around for a second there.
Nick was like, I thought it was on that podcast I have in my dreams.
The one where I get to look really smart and cool all the time.
the one, it's essentially like, wait, don't say it, but it's Nick talking about Yu-Gi-Oh! Everyone just tunes in every week to hear it.
Oh, man. So, anyway, Miyosaka's got the same dish as Soma, except he's got one additional piece of sushi. That's his one step beyond element. The MC, it's really pissed off about all of this, because she's like, oh, you guys just, you fucktards keep on saying, like, oh yeah, acting like you've got a big chance, saying that this guy is going to have a chance to get Saito Senpai, but there's no way that just because he prepared the same dish, it's going to be anywhere near the same quality. Yeah,
okay, she calls them lamos. For a moment, I was like, did she actually call them fucktards? I was like, wait, oh, that can't be right.
And she says specifically, there's no way your pathetic monkey see, monkey do attempt is going to be any good at all.
Ouch, take that.
So Mimasaka's like, okay, want to put your mouth where your mouth is? We just prepares an extra little bit of sushi for her. And I was like, here, try these pieces of sushi. I'll just let you sample them. And she's like, oh, my clothes!
Oh, they're all gone!
We didn't have a straightforward, really sexual bit of fan service in this. After she eats all the sushi, she imagines herself. I mean, there's a long explanation about, you know, Miyosaka's method of preparing them and how it's completely spot on to Somei's methods and so on and so forth. And she's like, there's that stalker isn't the same creep he was before. Inside his snaky cleverness, his creepy thoroughness, there's a passion that glows with the ruby red light. My body's so hot, I feel like I'm burning up. Thus far, I've avoided having an explosive taste reaction, damn it. I don't wanna, but I can't resist. Now I'll never be a bride. And there's herself in the freaking, like, kimono. The kimono's draping off the shoulder, and there's a freaking snake coiling around her. Really, really rapey.
It's just weird. Like, I get the joke to it, but it's such a weird joke to go to, where she's like, I've been violated and I'll never be pure again. It's like, you ate sushi! Like, it's that level of Shokugeki, you know, Soma, where it has to go to the next level, but there's sometimes where you're like, I'm not sure if this is the next level or the line was crossed, and I'm trying to figure it out, but it's just so strange. There's also that point to where I'm like, did she say this all into the mic? Because it looks like she is, and I wouldn't have announced this. I would have put the mic down.
She's just like, this sushi made me come!
This sushi just took my virginity! Mic drop. Oh, wait, hold on. I should drop that first.
Those things are very expensive. I might have to shout into the microphone later about how all this food is making me come. Anyway, the resistance is celebrating because Miyamasaka's perfect trace seems to have been successful. And so Takumi says, like, so, yeah, it's all going to come down to that one piece of sushi, then if his quality is top-notch, then it's just going to be literally where their dishes diverge. Let's see here. So their dishes are ready to sample, but at the same time, Rindo's like, oh, wait, I've got my dish here, and literally all the other chefs have their dishes ready all at the same time, ready to go. And we get a sequence of some really cool-looking two-page spreads with, you know, there's Rindo and there's Megashima. And they're just, like, you know, putting their hands forward, like, behold my dish, you know. But then the one that I really like is with Kuga and Tsukasa, who are, you know, side-by-side presenting their dishes forward. It's just a really cool image.
It's cool, but in my mind, I can't think of how they got to this pose without doing, like, a very strong thrust. And I'm like, that fucking dish of Kuga would have fallen right over. This is like, you know what? Nothing in Food Wars is believable now. I was willing to buy that snake made that girl come, but I don't think I could buy that food would still look as nice as that. That's ridiculous.
So all six dishes are presented for the judges, and so Drunky McLowley is like, let's try all six of them at once.
Did you call her Drunky McLowley?
Yes, I did. Those are the two things that we've learned about her so far, Chris. She's flat-chested and she's drunk. And also she likes books, but shut up. and they're like, are you seriously going to be able to, like, do that, though? And they're like, we're awesome judges. Of course we can judge all six dishes at the same time. Let's dig in. And that's where the chapter ends, with the six competitors squaring off. Yeah. It's, So again, I'm guessing that we're probably going to get just a really rapid fire sequence of judgments on who and winners declared in this.
Well, it's tough to say because we haven't seen any reaction. Like, Food Wars really usually tends to invest in its explanations of the dishes, and we haven't heard anyone's dishes explained yet except for Subaru specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we haven't seen anyone's reaction to anything being eaten yet. So I don't know if we'll necessarily get all the reactions at once. I think we might get a couple different tastes in the next chapter, or maybe one result, and it'll kind of be that for like a chapter or two, just to kind of get through everything. But I'm really excited about this. I think I made a tweet about this, but for a while, Food Wars had been kind of losing me for a good period of time. There just wasn't much to kind of hook into. There was also those very disappointing parts, which I got reminded of, but I made a joke last week about the ninth seat being impersonated, and people were like, Chris, don't you remember? That was the fifth seat. And I'm like, God, that was fucking stupid. Food Wars had been a little up and down, but I think this most recent set of battles has been, across the board, very entertaining. They've gotten unique personalities in, and they've managed to make it, so I'm not positive on what any of the results are going to be.
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten, you know, Miyamasaka's character development with his trace. We've gotten that big explanation of what Rindo does. We've gotten the rivalry between Tsukasa and Kuga, the one-sided rivalry, I should say. the assistance, the actual team element of the competition where Mimusaka helped out Kuga. And, you know, Megashima's, you know, backstory. Ignore that part. That's the one weak element.
Yeah.
People in the chat are pointing out that Rindo is in the wrong side in this final full-page spread of the two teams squaring off. Rindo and Megashima are on opposite sides as the other two, pairings for some reason.
Yeah, but they're also in the middle, and I guess it's just a way to kind of create that, like, asymmetrical symmetry in a way of not, like...
I think so, yeah.
I think it's just meant to kind of put it off balance. It is a little strange, but you're also supposed to remember these are separate bouts in a team format, so...
Right.
Yeah. It does look strange, though, but hey, I don't know. Maybe there's something subtle in that I'm not realizing.
Mm-hmm. We're just like, I'm on this team now.
I switch sides. That's what vampires do. I don't think that is, but I don't know enough about vampires to correct her.
All right, let's go over to Dr. Stone, Z equals 22, Survival Gourmet.
Nick, I think we're just going to make it a phrase now. We're just going to be like, Nick, it's time to get stoned! And then when I turn it into a joke further than that, and I actually just pull up like a giant bong, and I just start lighting, like, I'm like, no, Nick, you go ahead. I'm like, no, Nick, your analysis is great. I'm gonna take another hit real quick.
Okay, so, we just had Chogyakuin Osama, and apparently now we're getting a cooking chapter of Dr. Stone. So, we're at a bit of a new obstacle for Senku and company to overcome. In order to make iron, they need to have a lot more manpower. And so Senku and Chroma are just immediately like, we should use science as bait to get more help.
I like how every time they do it, too, you just see Kohaku in the corner like, stop! You're being evil! Stop! Like, it always sounds so insidious!
I also like the imagined bit is like Senku on a large rock with a fishing rod dangling a circle that says science on it above people. That's their science bait visual.
At this point, wouldn't that be Kohaku's, like, imagery of science? So at this point, like, Senku just keeps bringing it up, and she's like, it just has to be something, like a rock or something, right? Like some science rock? I don't get it. I climb up waterfalls and stab shit. I don't have this knowledge.
So, Senku and Chrome are just like, okay, go get intelligence, Suika, so that we can get people, on our side. Chrome calls her Great Detective Suika. So Suika imagines themselves in, like, you know, Sherlock Holmes gear.
I didn't want to interrupt. Have we gotten any confirmation as to, like, what gender Suika is?
I'm fairly sure that it's a girl, but I'm not going to dedicate myself to that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we hadn't found out anything yet. Oh, wait, yeah, with the help of young girl Suika to spy on the village for him. Okay, so it says it actually in the...
You don't know if that's correct.
That is true. I mean, they also made it so that...
You do put Yuno on the front of every Black Clover chapter.
According to them, Junior was a very important character to remember in Ruby as well, so... You know, these things can be wrong. I don't know.
I don't trust you, Viz summary. So Suika rolls off. It even has, like, a freaking Wonder Woman transformation sequence. Like, doesn't fall into the melon, but spins around and then poofs into the melon.
And then starts rolling around. It's something I feel like would be in a Legend of Zelda game. Like, put on your water chestnut helmet and then start rolling around and listening to conversations.
I love just the visuals of Suika rolling around and just, like, having the arrow pointing them out in various different locations while there are people discussing things with word bubbles with symbols in them. This is where Suika is! And then just, you know, like, rolling her back across the bridge. So Suika is like, okay, so first off, there's Garnet, Sapphire, and Ruby, the cast of Steven Universe. it's, she's like, okay, so what they want more than anything, and Senku is like, okay, so it better be something that we can use with Stone World science. And Suika's like, boyfriends. Oh.
He's like, got it, right on it. You see him start, like, chiseling a person out of stone.
With the, and then it's like, and just gets a bunch of clay, crafts into a huge dick.
Just crafts Stone Tom Brady out of it. Got it, we're done. Oh, wait, I gotta put some dialogue options for him on the back. It just turns him into a visual novel statue.
For whatever reason, Suika is announcing a lot of these things through a megaphone? Whatever. And so, and Suika's like, okay, this one wants a strong guy, this one wants a good provider, this one wants a hottie. So Kohaku's like, well, you seem to be quite the ladies' man, Senku, but unfortunately I don't think that you're what Sapphire means by a hottie.
It's like, that was uncalled for. I didn't claim to be. That felt unnecessary.
It's kind of a weird thing where she's kind of like, I like you, Senku, but I don't know. I don't think that most normal girls do, so.
She's like, you're going to have a particular type. Like the ones that aren't picky on scrawny losers, essentially. You know. It's like, I mean, this seems really harsh. I haven't said anything derogatory about you recently. I don't know where this is coming from.
So, Chroma's like, girls are always gossiping like that. That's why I don't like them. And Kohaku's like, oh, what a child you are, Chrome. Ruri and I are girls. Come on, do you hate us too? And Chrome's like, well, I don't see you as a girl, Kohaku. You're more like a gorilla. Just.
I love the reaction panel of it, though, of just, it's such a weird visual of her face huge, but her mouth very tiny, and I think flames shooting out of her open teeth, and it's just Chrome, like, prostrated himself before, like, I'm sorry. It's like, oh my god.
Prostrated before her naked. But Senku does, like, focus on, oh, hey, well, if one of them wants a man who's a good provider, we could try honing on her. So what's she actually after? And she's, and Suika's like, oh, you know, tasty food. Also, there's that village glutton guy, so we could use the same thing on him. And Suika's like, okay, so with that, we'll use scientific bait to get us some allies. And, so we're just gonna cook something. And Suika says, you know, food is science. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Good point. And he happens to catch Suika playing with, I forget.
Chalk.
Who was one of the people that was introduced in that 40-person, 2-page spread. So, don't forget about him.
Nothing bad better ever fucking happened to Chalk, Nick. I'm gonna lose that shit. Nothing bad happened to this dog. Chalk better become part of this team. I don't like the smile. It's uncomfortable. You're not supposed to do that naturally. And I don't like that it's come up now. This is terrifying. I can't tell if the video's frozen.
So, Suika's playing with Chalk with a little foxtail, which Suika calls a dogtail, but whatever. So Senku's like, oh, hey, foxtail grass, where'd you get that? And he points out, with enough of these, we can actually do what we need. We can make the world's most delicious meal with this. And so they head out into a field of foxtail grass, and you know, they get a bunch of it. Start preparing it, threshing, the foxtails. And he goes on, Senku meanwhile is going on, it's like, oh, it's a great source of grains. And so they throw a bunch of stuff into this pot, mix it up with water, sift it out, eventually just kind of get like actual grains from all of the foxtail powder stuff. Which leads into this tiny panel of all four of them. Doing high five. It's like, aw, adorable.
Did the dog get to high five? No! Why didn't the dog get to high five?
Suika is high fiving with both hands, therefore, standing in place of the dog.
See, I'm too emotional with certain characters, Nick, so I started to get a little bit upset that the dog was.
Is Chuck going to get his peanuts?
I was like, I'm not comfortable. The dog's sad. They're smacking the wheat. The dog wanted to play with the wheat, and they're smacking it. He's scared by this. Someone comfort that good doggo, Nick.
No.
Aw.
Just cut another thing of fox tail and just give that to the dog. You don't need.
That's what I'm saying, right? Somebody take care of that dog.
He'll forget immediately about all the fox tails that have been ruined by this. Anyway, they have gathered flour from the fox tails, and so he's like, okay, and we'll get some wild bird eggs, and we'll use some lye, da 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 da, and he essentially Senku makes ramen. Stone Age ramen from, ingredients that he has managed to scavenge. And he's like, behold, 3,700 years ago, we enjoyed this delicious dish of science, ramen. And Nagashima shows up, like, hey! I didn't prepare my ramen from scratch. What the fuck?
No, come on. Not cool, man. I love this in the notion of it's so absurd. Like, it's not just the thing of, like, all right, let's take you through the science of what it's like to make food and what it would be like to try to make a modern dish with Stone Age conditions. But it's like, we're making ramen, though. Like, like seeing it with, like, the fucking bone, like, the slabs of meat and shit hanging out of it, you're just like, this is so fucking absurd, but I love it.
And Senku warns all of them ahead of time. It's like, I'll bet you that this is like 10 billion times worse than the stuff produced in my time. And so, but they dig into it, and Suika and Kohaku and Chrome just freak out about it. Chrome makes a ridiculous face once he's eaten it. And they're like, it's so delicious! And Senku's like, ha ha ha, well, if you like it so much, then I guess that I'll try it too. Ah, the first decent gourmet cuisine in 3,700 years. It's so terrible! It's so bland and tasteless. It's like, well, whatever. These guys have never had anything like it before, so to them, it's like nectar of the gods. So, this'll totally work for us. And they make a freaking rickety bamboo ramen cart and haul it into the village.
That's like, you can't, like, it's so absurd in this notion of just like, there's two people in the village that they think they convinced to join them with food. So what will be their plan to get this to them? Well, obviously they're going to invent ramen, and then obviously they're going to create the first mobile ramen serving tart as well. I mean, come on.
And as they're wheeling it, or as they're dragging it into town, Senku's just thinking to himself, with the power of ramen, this village will be mine to command!
Kohaku seems to imply he's saying it too, because she's like, from your actions, it seems like you're a nice guy, but every word of your mouth just seems like you're evil.
I do love Kohaku now. She has some great straight man interactions with Senku that I do really appreciate. It's so weird that we've gone so long without the rest of our main cast, but I do have to give this credit, from, Inagaki's writing, just like this secondary cast of characters that we've gotten to help out Senku have really grown on me really, really quickly. So.
Yeah, I think we could both agree one of the best parts of Ice Shield 21 was that team dynamic and seeing a bunch of different characters interact, and I never thought we'd get this many this quickly, but we've gotten a huge group, and it looks like we might be getting more if this Sapphire and Garrett, I think, are the two people they kind of hint at. If those two end up being part of this group too, I'm curious to see what kind of humor they try to put in there, what kind of personalities they try to put in there. But like, I like Suika, just this simple personality. She just pops into her water chestnut helmet and just rolls around and spies on people. And nobody's like, oh, that water chestnut has like eye holes on
eyes.
It. Oh, well. So anyway, here's my bank account number. I say to no one in particular.
Suika's a millionaire now.
I just love how silly it all is, but just how much fun it is too. Like it never takes itself so seriously or anything like that. It's just a very like silly, weird series. I'm almost not certain what it's gonna be like when all this like gets together and we start have to gain back into the fact like, oh yeah, Tsukasa, the mass murderer is out there. Like we had to deal with that guy
trying to conquer the globe.
Yeah.
Oh man.
All right, so let's move on to We Never Learned, Chapter 26. Sometimes a genius's every action is at the mercy of X. So last time, Takamoto had been pushing herself too hard. She was trying to be good at school, and that was causing her athletics to slip down. So she's like, I'm going to put more effort in, got her athletics back up without dropping in her academics. However, that was just too much. She wasn't gaining enough rest, and because of that, she fainted in a hallway, basically lightheadedness. So Yuega had taken her to the office, the nurse's office, and when a bunch of girls came in to go check up on her, he hid underneath the bed, and they discussed how they believed that he, Yuega, was Takamoto's crush. So this chapter is dealing with all the consequences of that, as Yuega has now heard this, and he's just like, Takamoto likes me?
Likes me?
And we actually get what I think is a pretty funny and humorous sequence, because it's all essentially what we tend to get from the opposite side of this scenario, where a female character isn't sure what to do with this information, so they go on the brain dead situation. But it's Yuega this time, and he's like rubbing wasabi on toast and just eating it, and he just doesn't care. Like, his sister's like, or no, it's his mom who's like, no, that's wasabi. And his sister's just like, what's happening to you? As he's just like, nah. Apparently, this time he could actually have the full bread. He didn't have to eat just the crust. So,
No, the crusts are what he has for lunch, Chris.
All right. He saves the rest of it. So he's walking home, or walking, I think, to school with the two other girls, Ogata and Furuhashi. Right. And he stops because he's just very
before distracted. We move on, okay. Hang on, at this moment. You know, Fumino and Ogata are discussing this, like, oh yeah, Uruka is back to normal. I'm so glad she's healthy. And Ogata is like, yes, we can celebrate her recovery with udon. And she's just got that same wide-eyed, vacant expression on her face as whenever she takes a drink. So she's like, udon.
She's like, we can celebrate to the great glorious udon, the recovery of our good friend. Our friend.
Right, okay.
We will do very human-like gestures to show our love and process appreciation for her. It's just like, what's happening?
Maybe I should just support Uruka and throw this girl onto the fucking bus.
Oh, it's like serial killer tendencies now. She's like, I can really solve a lot of problems with one action. But then Takamoto shows up, and she's super excited because she's back in order. She's rested up, everything like that. And I like that. I'm not sure if he did it, just he ran in. He just ran into the telephone pole, I guess, because he was distracted. But she just turns, and Yuega's just face first into a telephone pole. And he's just like, how's it going, Takamoto? Glad to see you recovered. Like, his face bleeding and shit. And he's nervous because he's like, I know she has a crush on me. What do I do? And she doesn't know this. She doesn't know that information's been exchanged. So she's just trying to be friendly and personal. She's like, here you go. Here's some tissues for your bleeding nose. And he gets all shy. And it's just nice because we see this very frequently from the other end of the spectrum, where it's the female character who's the one who has all this nervous reaction and things like that. And thankfully in this one, it's not too sexual either. It's very like innocent teenage, like love sort of things. Like, she bumped my arm. Oh, why does that get me so jittered?
No,
I don't know.
It's mostly innocent. It's mostly innocent.
I even love, it's so fucking like obvious too, but she's just like, hey, Naruyuki, what does to be conscious of mean? He's just like, oh, well, it means that you're aware of something and all of the context surrounding. Oh, your arm! Fumino asks him, like, hey, she was lightheaded the other day. Could you walk her home tonight? He's like, absolutely. So he's walking her home, and they're still a little awkward, but she's like, hey, you know, I want to thank you for helping me. He's like, I didn't do anything big. She's like, you did. I want to pay you back. Let's go get some food together. So they get ramen.
Hold on.
All right.
So they're walking along, and Uruka pauses, like, hey, you know, I really appreciated when you helped me. So can I do something to pay you back? And I didn't notice this the first time reading it, but if you look behind her, the most prominent, glowy-ass building right next to her is a fucking love hotel. And, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the joke there being that he thought for a moment that she was inviting him to the hotel.
Right, something that he would never have thought of, like, if not for the fact that he knows that she has a crush on him.
Gotcha. So, yeah, because they do mention a hotel afterwards. But no, she was actually referring to the yummy ramen shop next to the Love Hotel. And they have some ramen together. And it's you know, it's funny to a certain extent because, you know, he's over there like, I can't believe I thought she wanted to think I was thinking something so lewd. I'm so sorry. But then he's, like, watching her eat for a moment. And he's like, wow, she's so beautiful. And it's somewhat weirdly... Like, it's not erotic, but
it's not somewhat weirdly erotic. It is erotic.
it's not like he's, like, it'd be a little more disturbing if it was, like, her breasts were, like, heaving over her shirt or something like that or something along those lines. But it's not quite some, because there is a level, like, when you're in young love where anything a person does kind of is just enchanting to you. That I can, like, see this being a connection of like, wow, even eating ramen, she looks good. Like, it's just, like, a young person in love kind of thing. But I don't know, there's something about, like, the way she's, like, brushing her hair back and, like, eating it. I'm just like, this feels weirdly, yeah, like, it's just, like, and just staring, like, presumably he's just staring at her the whole time that I'd be like, yeah, is everything all right? Are you going to fit it?
There was actually a video a long time ago, like, this attractive girl and is close up on her face while she's making slurping sounds, and it pans back and reveals that she's just eating noodles. And just slurping noodles down. So, I think that that's what this is attempting to evoke, is that he's got sex on the brain, and so her slurping down noodles and making him just like, oh.
He's just like getting all hot and bothered. Because even Ted's like, I never realized ramen could be so sexy.
Like, and Megashima comes to the dog.
He's like, you haven't tried my ramen. I'll make sure that she can never be a bride. Like, that's not how I don't advertise it like that. Don't put those on business cards, please.
Iruka with in a sexy kimono and a freaking ramen noodles coiling around her.
But yeah, they're walking home, and this is the moment where Yueka just goes for it. He's like, hey, actually, sorry, it's Takamoto who does it. She just goes out, and she's like, hey, do you have someone special? And he's like, no, of course not. Till exams are over, there's no room for any of that. And he stops and looks back and sees her expression, and she is actually blushing and has kind of an excited face on her. So she's like, oh, well, right, yep, of course, anyway. And she's walking away, and this is when Yuiga's like, let's just do it. Is the guy you like me? And she stops for a moment. And Yueka is immediately
like, why did I do that?
Oh! But she just turns. She's like, of course not. What a question. And he's like, oh, no! The other way. The other shoe drops. And he's super embarrassed. But she's like, ah, don't worry about it. It's, yeah, whatever. And he's like, well, that was weird. But at least it cleared up my question. And I could focus on exams again. Jeez. Who's strange? I wonder who her crush is, though. And then we cut away to Yuega, or Takamoto in her bath, tan lines and all. Somehow she still has a swimsuit wedgie. Snap that out. And she's like, why did I say I didn't when I did? And she thinks about how Yuega just mentioned, like, no, I can't have a girlfriend until the exams are done. There's just no time for that. And she's like, you know, I guess the only thing I would want to get in the way of his dreams. So if he rejected me, we could probably never get back to the way things are. So... better just leave them as they are until exams are over. And that's the end of the chapter. There's a sort of joke about Araka taking baths for hours, but...
I like this chapter overall. Uh-huh. It's a little bit up and down in certain places. I think that when the jokes venture from cutesy into silly erotic, then they kind of lost me.
But Nick, I never imagined that ramen could be so sexy.
So I know that some people are like, oh come on, it's just a stupid way to, you know, tease a reveal or tease progression and then go back to the status quo. Well, yes, but you're gonna get that in probably every single romantic comedy where there is a secret attraction in it. There's always going to be a little bit of a tease of that. As long as, you know, are they going to hook up with, or who's going to reveal their feelings is kind of teased, then you're going to get one of those obvious reveals, anti-reveals. It's the character explanation for why things played out the way that they did makes sense. I could totally buy that Iruka would do this based off of what we have learned about her through the course of the series. In terms of how she feels about Yuga, in particular, how, what she admires about him and wants him to succeed at. So.
Yeah, see, I can understand completely if people are frustrated by us, because there are certain things that are frustrating. Nick, you have no idea how much I shit all over the Flash TV series when they had an entire episode where every stupid subplot was resolved just for at the end of the episode. Flash, like, I have to go back in time and undo this episode for one small thing. I'm like, you fuckers! You fucked me! You made me sit here for an hour and do nothing! I get that. And I can see this is a chapter that essentially does do that thing of like, oh, here we go. Nah, let's pull back. But I think the thing that can kind of help with this is the execution isn't, forced. As you said, it makes sense for why Takamoto would think this way. It doesn't introduce some new piece of information that's arbitrarily going to be the cause for why they do this or anything along those lines. So I totally understand why people are frustrated by it, but this one doesn't bother me as much because it at least feels like it doesn't feel like nothing of consequence came out of this. It does feel like there's at least something from it, and it was executed in a way that, for the most part, was nice. As you said, when it moved from cutesy to...
Iruka did learn from this experience, for example. Yeah. You know, like you pointed out, like, this was actually something that I missed, like, the look of relief on her that you had, in his life that he was interested in. Like, oh, well, she's like, oh, okay, that means that there's a chance for me. Mm-hmm. And she's got that, and, you know, it's a way to maintain the status quo while changing things a little bit. And it also kind of gives us a hint of how Yuga would react to the kind of information, like, one of the girls I'm tutoring likes me.
Yeah. And it's just a sentiment that doesn't feel like it detracts from anything. Like, if this was a situation where Takamoto decided not to pursue it, but she was like, why am I just such an idiot? I had the moment to confess, but I didn't. But, she, you know, if it just felt like she was being stupid and a teenager, it might be more frustrating. But she actually kind of has a mature logic to it where it's just like, he really needs to get into a good school. Like, I don't want to impact his studying. And she's not giving up on either. She's like, after exams, then... You know, it's just the notion of we got something from it, so.
Okay.
Yeah, decent chapter.
All right. Let's move on then to the Promised Neverland. Last time there was hunting, training, and stuff like that. Ray learned to cook. There's so much cooking going on in manga this recently.
it's like every series, because One Piece has it too later on. We're going to have a cooking thing.
At one of those Shonen Jump meetings where, like, all the authors and artists are invited, did they just have, like, a really good buffet laid out or something?
Everyone's like, yo, this ramen's dope. Holy shit, I'm putting this in a chapter. This is amazing.
Oh, boy. So,
you just hear, like, somebody behind it's like, we laced the ramen with cocaine. I don't know why.
It's water. Ordinary water. Laced with LSD. I love that episode of Futurama. Nothing but ordinary water. Laced with LSD.
This is a tangent, but hey, we're a weekly manga recap. What's happening?
That's our bread and butter, man.
I just caught a montage on YouTube the other day of the best scenes of Simpsons where Homer talks with his brain. Oh, yeah. And I had forgotten one of the scenes in it.
You shit, goods and services.
There was like one great one where Marge is like, oh, we got a letter from the high school asking us to go to our high school reunion. Huh, that's strange. Is not one for you. And like, Homer's brain's like, all right, Homer, it's time for you to come out and tell the truth to Marge that you've been forever hiding. Marge, I'm the one who ate your fancy bathroom soaps. Oh, my God! He's like, no, the other one. Marge, I didn't graduate high school. Well, that doesn't explain why you ate my soaps. Or wait, does it? Like, I just laugh for like 5 minutes. It's her reaction that tells it. Like, the reaction to you ate my bath soaps is, oh, my God!
Oh, you never graduated high school. Okay.
Like, it's nothing in comparison to
my bathroom.
Your fancy bathroom. Oh, guys love Simpsons.
$20 can buy many peanuts. Explain how.
Money can be exchanged for goods and services.
Oh, man. Okay. Anyway, so Promised Neverland. The kids have been led outside of the tunnels by Sanju and Muzika. And... yes, Nick, remember the second demon's name for once.
I'm sorry, I'm remembering more, but I gotta stop.
Okay. As we get the chapter title, 50 Friends. Yeah, they're like, oh, you kids are all such great learners, because all the kids have set about gathering items, preparing food, making a campfire, all these different things. And they're like, geez, you kids learned fast. And Lucas are like,
not as fast as Ray and Emma. And Norman was fast, too. He's dead now.
Had one more sleep, and it's night-night forever. Like, which kid is this? Oh, that's Goth Boy. We didn't give him a real name, because this one felt more appropriate.
He's got, like, a spiked collar and a heavy eyeshadow. Let's see here. All the kids are really optimistic about being at their destination tomorrow, but Gilda all of a sudden is kind of like looking worried, and she says, I was thinking how we're kind of straying from the plan. She says, I was thinking about the old tale that Sanju told us. It's hopeful that there is a human world separate from here, but to not have a human society in the demon world is a disadvantage to our plan, because the thing that we were hoping to do was to find a community of humans who could help us. And we can't do that. We can't blend in with them. We need manpower to get back Phil and the others. So it's a very good point. Like, yes, we've got an eventual escaping place, but now this means that we've got to do all this stuff that we were planning to do completely on our own. Emma goes up to Sanju and she says, hey, are there, you know, more kids like us? You know, other people who have escaped from the farms? And, they're like, yeah, you know, Ray's like, yeah, you know, because there are a whole bunch of farms, so yeah, maybe someone escaped from one of them. Yeah, maybe that's what happened with, or maybe something happened with the other farms that Minerva was trying to reach out to and stuff. So there's hope that we could have reinforcements on this. And Sanji's like, no. No.
You're wrong. Everyone's dead. They're gone. No.
You're all stupid.
They're brain dead farms. Don't bother. No. Give up.
He says that, okay, if there were other kids, there would only be very few of them, maybe one or two, because there are different types of farms out there, and you guys are from a top-class farm, but most of them are mass-production farms, where they basically matrix you up. It's one of those kinds of things that looks like it would be in a PETA, you know, ad. It's like, imagine being confined to sit and grow fat until you were slaughtered for your whole life, you know, kind of thing.
Right, it's like, the only good Matrix is the Matrix 3. People underappreciate it because it's so hated and reviled, but it's actually the best of them when you consider the real themes of everything.
Oh my god, that moment where the little girl makes a rainbow for Neo, oh my god, it's so emotional.
Think of every color of the rainbow and the many, many different emotions that are contained within each beautiful color. And then realize you're a fucking idiot.
You know what my favorite line from The Matrix is? It's the entire speech the architect gives to Neo in the second movie. That entire speech is fucking brilliant.
You guys just don't realize how little you know. You know what happened? The first time I met the architect, he gave me that speech. I didn't have to wait for the 78th iteration. They didn't actually give me a number because I was actually before the first. The one, you know.
You got a number on your neck.
Shut up! It doesn't define me!
He puts like tape over it. It's like hashtag Ray.
Doesn't realize he's writing it backwards. Everyone's like, I'm starting to think Ray's not actually this smart.
just humor him. Pretend he's got the best IQ of all of us. Anyway. So Sanju says, like, the humans that are raised in mass production, they're basically just cattle. They don't even have their own language. They aren't taught to speak. They don't have any education. They don't even have names. They've got no free will. So none of them would ever even consider escaping in that situation. Even if they could, they wouldn't be able to at all. So it was like, well, shit. Because mostly because they're all terrified because Sanji just told a group of children, most humans on the planet are raised like soulless cattle.
Yeah, that is like a dark thought that the rest of the chapter doesn't completely dwell on, because like the second half is a very human chapter about Emma mm-hmm. sharing these moments with the other demon. When this one, like the start of it's like, hey, there's just like farms of brain dead kids that are being raised over and over again and devoured. Like, you just deal with that reality. And you're like, mm-hmm. oh fuck, this got a little heavy. Can we get Crone back? I liked it when things are simple and the biggest evil was Crone.
So, yeah, Sanju says, like, okay, so there are several hundred mass production farms, but there are only four top-class farms like the Racefield House. So if this Minerva guy was going to reach out to other farms, it would be only those four, three farms, not including Racefield. So, yeah, important information to have in terms of what they're going to try and accomplish from all of this. And he says, like, hey, look, if they did escape, they didn't survive. You've already experienced how dangerous it is to be out here, so you can't rely on finding other escapees. But I do occasionally hear about theft, because there are demons who steal from farms because they want to eat humans in rare cases. So maybe you can use that information to your advantage. But you guys are the only really, really intelligent humans out here. That's it. So a little bit of time goes by. Emma's thinking to herself, and then Mujica comes up to Emma, and she's like, so, are you, like, horribly depressed now that you've been told that, or are you okay? You're okay? Good. Okay, not horribly depressed. Yay.
All right, I'm just going to head out then. Wait, hold on. I want to tell you about my friend. Ah, fuck.
But first, I want to strike this flexi pose that makes me look really cartoonish. I like how she, when she's, because, you know, she says, because she's really optimistic about this. She says, like, I'll figure out a way to do this. Even if this is impossible, I'll do it. And Mujica thinks to herself, she's so strong because of that, you know, personality and that, you know, bonus. But she's also flexing her arm while she's doing it. So it kind of makes it seem like she's going, like, she's so strong.
Oh, my God, Emma, you're so cut for a 12-year-old. She's like, I mean, I'm wearing a jacket. I don't even think you can see any definition of my arms from here. But
let me feel your muscles.
I mean, they didn't raise us to be athletically gifted, just, you know, whatever. I'm just going to go with it. See what my mom's
doing. Over me, fine.
I do love this, though. I do love Emma. Can't be discouraged. We had that whole, two or so chapters where it looked like Emma had just given up everything, only to find out, like, she had never given it up. And it's nice seeing here when she doesn't need to put on a facade of seeming depressed that it's like, no, she's like, I can't because I have my family and everyone around me needs me to be like this to survive.
Mm-hmm. And, she, you know, goes on this long thing, like describing all these kids in her family that they had to leave behind momentarily. There's so much love and happiness in her face that it's kind of infectious and Mujica is laughing along with her.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
As I say, they share a nice little three panels, too, where there's no dialogue. You just see reactions. Mm-hmm. It reminds me a little bit of, I think Shudan did something like this very similar, too, where it just showed, like, the two characters connecting over no dialogue. Yeah. Just happy. So presumably this will also end like Shudan, and I guess the other demon just gets hit by a truck on their way out of the house afterwards or something like that. I don't know how Shudan ended. I'm just assuming, but I think that's how these things
work. Why would she have gotten hit by a truck? Her house was next door.
The truck ran into her house, Nick. I think the bigger question you have to ask is, why is there a truck in the demon lands? That's the real question. How does that get
the truckers
here? I'm like, this really throws a wrench into Emma's plans. She never gets their trucks out here, I don't think.
Trucks running over. You were prepared to be pursued by demons. You were prepared for snakes and wild animals and starvation, dying without finding a source of water. But you didn't count on not. But you didn't think about looking both ways before crossing the road.
You foolish children! You sweet summer babies!
Ray's like, I know what to do in this situation. He just falls on the ground and stops, drops, and rolls.
Right underneath the one tire. Ray, you almost had it. So close.
Okay. Eventually,
Emma, I'm still alive. Only my legs were destroyed. I can still be hashtag Ray. You'll just have to carry me everywhere. It's just Emma slowly pulling out a pistol. Like, douche, douche. Douche, douche, douche. No one must ever know. Oh, man, we made a chapter that involves brain-dead human farm so much darker somehow.
So eventually, Emma pulls out a picture of her and Norman together. And was like, yeah, and this is Norman. I promised him that I wouldn't give up. I wouldn't let anyone die, and I'd escape with everyone. But it's not easy. I still have to come up with how to pull it all off. But I want to live with my entire family no matter what. I'm going to live with my family, and to do that, I'll overcome even things that are impossible. So good for you. Eventually, however, she also kind of like, hey, so, you know, you don't really seem much like a demon, by the way. I know that's kind of offensive for me to say, but, you know,
she's so like, many weird... Excuse me, not all demons. You're like, oh, geez, all right, come on now. Let's not start with this.
But she points out, like, hey, you know, almost all the demons that I've seen aside from you, they're these weird different shapes and sizes, but you're incredibly human-like, despite that. And... Mujica kind of mutters to herself. I think that that's what's implied because it's, like, translated.
I think it's supposed to be the demon language. Because remember, there's times where the demons have talked.
It's weird because it looks like kanji, though.
It has a similarity to it. I don't know enough about.
Like warp kanji, it looks like.
It's also distinctly different from what I remember the text for demons talking was. So maybe this is an offshoot language that these, like, pacifist demons practice or something along those lines. I mean, they're specifically talking about their appearance becoming warped in the last 1,000 years. So you could be referring to a language that existed back then and just isn't the norm anymore, you know, as demons' culture has changed or whatnot. Mm.
So herself is, it's true that our appearance has become warped in the last 1,000 years. So... apparently the demons have gone through a lot of changes in addition to the world itself. So she says, hey, you know, I'd never gotten to talk to humans or even seen humans before you came along. And, you know, enemies, you're also not food. You're different from any other living thing. So I'm glad that I met you and got a chance to talk. And I'm glad that we became friends. She doesn't really answer the question. Essentially, she's just like, hey, it's nice that we're friends, Emma. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And Mujica kind of thinks a silent prayer to herself, you know, please have mercy on Emma and her family for my friends who are of a different kind. And we see a brief image of Ray entering in a password, on the pen. And, there's a boom sound effect, so.
Yeah, the last text line she says is, please let them have light.
There you go.
I'm
going to fill your world with light!
I know now. Like, Kingdom Hearts is light! He's like, oh, shit. Oh, wait, no, it's full of monsters. You're wrong, kid. You're fucked.
No, actually, wait, what is that line? He's like, I wanted to be the one to fill your soul with light!
I want to get your thoughts.
I never played Devil May Cry, sorry.
I want your opinion on this, Nick. Do you think that we're in for any kind of twist involving these two demons?
I'm sure.
Well, for the longest time, I was like, there's just gotta be another shoe to drop on this. Cause it's just weird that they have run into a situation that seems to have no, like, underlying conflict in it. Like, I know that the demon's like, hey, eventually you gotta move on. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what they want too, so it's not like an issue for the kids. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, maybe it's like there's a speed connection. But this chapter, the show is like the demons are able to become good friends with them. And the dire, like, last sentiment is from the viewpoint of the one demon saying, like, I want them to have a happy life. Like, please don't go any harder on them. Like, give them light. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I can't decide if I want the other shoe to drop because that's what the series has felt it's always been kind of doing, placing the obstacles in front of these kids and this. You know, the farm kids are the only people they can rely on. Or if I like it better, if they kind of subvert the expectation of that and just be like, no, they're into two cool-ass demons who are just friendly with them. And I don't know which one I think I like better.
I think that there is going to be some sort of twist with their involvement, but I don't think it's going to be a particularly nefarious one, mostly based off of the stuff that we've gotten from Mujica and Sanju in private. It seems as though Mujica really does care about the well-being of the kids, and Sanju is being kind of secretive around them. And so there is something that they haven't told the kids yet. Mostly it seems about one of the obstacles that they're going to have to go up against and overcome in order to pull off their plan. But, I mean, unless they are, for whatever reason, directing them into another human farm for some stupid reason, then I highly doubt that that's what's going on.
That'd be so fucking dark. They're like, no, they sent us to the other farm!
It's just like the frickin'... What is it that, what were those two goddamn characters in Game of Thrones where it made it seem like he was being led to his escape and it was, no, it was all psychological torture to give him hope and then take it away. Do, 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 do.
You mean Rukia?
In Game of Thrones.
Well, I'm just saying they did the same thing with Rukia too, didn't they? Didn't, like, Jin go in and try to act like he was going to release her?
Yeah, but they didn't spend an entire episode, like, escorting her away and then leading her back to her prison so that she could have her dick cut off. If he had one.
Oh, Theon?
Yes.
I didn't remember that.
That dick hole, yeah.
I have no idea. The series Game of Thrones deals with a lot of the Theon dick-cutting stuff that the books just skipped right over. Theon's gone from book two when he's kidnapped till book five when he comes back dickless and a bitch. So you miss all of the weird stuff in between. Thankfully. But 12 good men, Nick. That's all you need. Bunch of Game of Thrones memes just getting thrown about. All right, so let's move on to Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 229. Love is a maiden's power. So last time, Melodius is still stuck inside of Meliscula as she uses his power to basically force him to fight against the Seven Deadly Sins. Not directly, but the representations of his anger and frustration, everything like that is the enemy. And she had then converted Diane, actually. She had kind of gotten in her head and turned Diane against them. And things looked pretty bleak because it was like, hey, she's either going to kill us or she could just use Diane's own weapon to start massacring herself. How are we going to get around this when Elizabeth showed up and, like, fucking love-beamed that shit right out of her? And that's where we pick up as we see Diane has returned to normal. She, the effect, like, flashes by and then she turns and sees King and everything's good with them and
Yay. Everything's yeah. Fine now. Nothing bad's gonna happen now.
Nope, everything's just good for everybody. Elaine actually, I believe, is the one who asked this, although it's not entirely certain. She says, so which Elizabeth are you right now? And she's like, well, I'm the goddess Elizabeth, but I'm also the Elizabeth from Lioness Kingdom. I'm like both now. And then she's like, oh, hey, is that Merlin? I want to ask you something. And Gauth is like, Merlin, she's asking you a question. Merlin, what's going on? And Elizabeth walks up to her and is like, you've grown into such a beautiful, mature woman. Oh, what's going on, Merlin? Why don't you call me Sissy like you used to? And we get, like, this joke, I guess, that Merlin used to be, like, consider herself sisters with Elizabeth. And, like, the joke just being that she had this, like, very childish and girlish side of her at one point in time to contrast, like, the sex cougar that she became as an adult.
She seems like she used to be a much more interesting character.
It's like, she's like, I have no time to deal with this shit. Like, she just doesn't even, like, I don't know what you're talking about. Shut up. Go away.
And
everyone's just,
well, you know, when you were, like, 12 and you wanted to braid my hair and talk about boys.
And Esker's like, oh, Princess Elizabeth. Oh, hold on, wait, no. He's like, raw, Princess Elizabeth, if you could, I'd love to hear more details about her. She's like, you shut your goddamn whore mouth, Escanor! And that's when middle school was like, hey, we got a thing going on here. Shut your faces, all of you.
Look, I'm naked. Now yeah, I'm a snake.
I'm a fucking snake lady. And she notes how she's really pissed because it's the goddess Elizabeth who swayed Melodius and forced him to change sides, an enemy there, and the seven deadly sins who have opposed us, the Ten Commandments, even that little fairy that I gave half of my life to, or a part of my life to. What are you all here? I'm going to kill you all. And she turns into this giant snake. And she's like,
you'll see how snake-like I can be.
Yes. She's like, I don't have to take, I don't want to have to take this for him. It's not very cute.
Turns into a Hispanic snake.
Yeah, exactly. And Bond's like, yo, but that's my fetish. I love this shit. And she's just like, gross, and slams into the ground. And, Merlin, I think, protects most of the characters by just sort of shielding them. But Bond is caught in her mouth and is basically about to be crushed. She's got that Hercules, like, fighting against the Hydra thing going on where he's just kind of holding her mouth open. And she's like, ah, I'm going to digest you, and then you'll spend your eternal life, like, just getting slowly digested inside of me and regenerating from that, never able to escape.
Which is, like, the first time that it sounds like someone has actually found a way to, like, actually make Bond's immortality be bad. So, good for you.
Yeah, I mean, the only other solution is to, like, drive a plane into him and knock him into a volcano that then shoots him into space. But you gotta be eaten by piranhas while it's happening, or otherwise it doesn't do anything, so. Yeah, this seems a little bit easier. Elaine tries to go and help her, try to help Bond, though. And, I like it because she, like, sends out her attack, chasing Whirlwind, and middle school is just like, that tickles. Fuck off. And just slaps her away with, like, the back of her, like, gives no fucks. Just like, out of here. And, Bond's saying, like, no, not like, stop. Just don't push your body too hard. You know, you're too weak. You gotta save yourself. And Elaine's like, no, if I'm supposed to not push myself now, then when can I do it? And she goes at it again. She's like, I don't care. This is what I want to do. I want to be able to protect you. I'm tired of you always having to protect me. And middle school is just like, city girl, you can't steal your lover back.
But she's got a bun in her mouth, so she's like,
yeah, show back, girl. She mastered ventriloquism, and she's just like, you can't steal him away. He's going to be... No, fuck. Fuck! She just pops through, just yoinks him right out. And, Hawk gives a whole explanation of his combat, I guess her combat class greatly increasing because power levels need to do that, to explain why she was able to do that. Basically, she had the, what's that term they use for, like, when a mother gains, like, superhuman strength to lift a car off her baby?
Adrenaline rush?
Yeah, I thought there was another term for it, but, yeah, but she got an adrenaline rush, essentially, and it increased her feelings. Everyone's like, that's why love is the strongest force. She's so beautiful. And we see Elaine with, like, the big fairy wings and everything like that. And
also, her hair grew out.
A little bit's got to do that, you know. That's
she's a girl.
She's got her important anti-haircut, Nick. That's a very vital thing. And we then cut back inside. Or actually, no, sorry. The cocoon that basically trapped Melodious breaks open. And they're like, shit.
It's a great reaction because middle school is like, oh, cheeky girl, I will kill you. And then it starts to burst. And she's like, ah.
She's like, oh, come on. One break today, please. And she's like, no, not even Zeldris can escape my doom cocoon. And we see that this angry, evil Melodious is coming out. And Escanor's...
It's gloom cocoon. It sounds far less stupid than doom cocoon.
Yeah, I know, right?
And she does actually say specifically that Zeldris could actually break out of it, but he would have to use the Demon Lord's magic.
Ah, okay, yes. So presumably that's what maybe Melodious is channeling into right now. And Escanor is just like, answer my will, divine axe, Leton. He pulls out an axe that doesn't look fancy at all. Like, it seems really underwhelming in the grand scheme of things, but maybe it's just because he's really big. And, Merlin's like, no, you like, the captain's too much for you right now. The way he is. And he's just like, oh, woman should learn to keep her mouth quiet. I don't think I asked you to make a roast, and I didn't ask for your opinion. So now he says, don't worry. I may not look it, but I'm an excellent babysitter. And I'm going to spank this misbehaving child back into behaving.
Mind talk.
The game is shut and the hunt is on. So yeah, that's the chapter. I like this chapter though. It's, I like Elaine getting her little moment there. It's perfectly in character. Middle school has been around enough too that I don't really care about her kind of getting like the Jopper defeat this time around. Like nothing she did really felt all that crazy here. So I'm pretty cool with that. I like this chapter.
It was fun. And we got, you know, Seven Sins is at its best when it's got that kind of like, fast pace, but there is a sense of like not too much happening in each chapter. So Elaine's gets to have a really big moment, and then we've got this, oh, what stuff is still really bad thing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious to see if this means then that both Elizabeth and Elaine are just fine now.
Yeah, that's, we'll have to see. But it's also weird because they've really kind of pointed in that, like, Elizabeth now has, like, a control knowledge and seemingly, like, a consciousness between her and the goddess form. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that presents a lot of opportunity for her to just be like, well, I could heal away your injuries. And the seven deadly sins themselves were already pretty fucking immortal, grandly speaking, so.
And they've got Hawk, so, I mean, come on.
Yeah, we need him.
It's too unfair. He's the strongest thing in the world,
I
Chris.
I still don't get how you love Hawk, but you hate
Best.
Blue. I can't grasp it.
He didn't do a lot in this chapter. But he announced that power level with such enthusiasm.
He also gets really upset because Meliscula doesn't bring him up when she's discussing all the people she hates are around. He's just like, what about me?
Well, yeah.
What about Hawk? Nick's like, yeah, what about Hawk?
Yeah. What about me? I live in a box. No one live in a box. What about Hawk?
Like, your mom goes, like, Nick, someone shot a dog outside our place. You're like, all right, well, I mean, could you kill it quickly so it doesn't interrupt any of my sweet Hawk reading scenes?
Was it a talking pig? Then I don't care about it.
Yeah. Mom, did you not read the sign on my door that says if it's not a talking pig, I don't care about your animal?
Anyway, that said, let's move on to Black Clover, page 120, Bad Blood.
Black Clover!
We get this full-color, full-page spread of some of the important characters in this tournament arc, like the fake Zerks, and that one pretty boy, and that one dear captain guy. And one out of three is not terrible, I guess, you know?
I don't mind the second guy. Is that real?
He's okay.
I don't eat everything about him.
But who takes front and center? Most prominent person on the page? Painty McDeer dude.
That is the best name. Painty McDeer dude. I don't care what his real name is, that's what it's gonna be now. So Painty McDeer dude walks in and he's fucking talking some shit. Painty McDeer.
Annalise is in the chat and points out that it looks like he's got a selfie stick going on. He does kind of look like that.
He seems like the asshole would have a selfie stick.
I'm going to get these banned from Disney World.
So anyway, we're down to the eighth and final match in the first round, finally, which involves Noelle and the second most important character in the series, Chris, you know. And also they've got a third teammate who is this very gaunt looking guy from the Green Praying Mantises. He looks like he's going to fall over any second, honestly. Poor guy. I feel bad. I feel a deeper connection to him than I do for a lot of the new characters that have been introduced to this entire tournament.
Aww.
Look at these, like, yeah. Anyway, Noelle and Yuno immediately are just like, I don't like you. I don't like you either.
It's weird, because I'm like, but robots shouldn't have a reason to be bitter and angry. Like, why does Yuno have that personality to him? And I guess he's like personality, like when he's, I guess this is the personality he shares with that, like when he like has a dialogue with Asta. But his response is just to be like a really shithead, like big shithead, yeah. Where he's just like, that's not even a real argument. You have such a childish way of putting things. Just like,
it seems like he should be going after every sentence or something like that.
Guy, why couldn't I be paired up with Painty McDeer, dude?
But Asta starts off as the focus of the conversation because Noelle's like, you're childhood friends with him, right? So you better not be a reckless idiot like him. And you know, it's like, well, you could barely control your mana during the volcano test, so I don't know if you're going to be able to keep up. Where you laughing about, Bruce?
I'm sorry. I just looked at the panel a little bit further ahead where Asta starts saying, come on, guys, play nice.
Play nice. Can't we all just get along?
Like an old woman watching. Come on, Choo-choo, oh,
come
nice.
On, babies. It's all sitting at the table.
So Noelle gets really pissed off at you. He's like, I'm a royal and you're a peasant and you're a barbarian. How dare you criticize me? And literally, Yudo does go, that's not even a real argument. You're just making a childish, lashing out like a child. And Noelle's like, Yudo says, did you catch that childish way of putting things from Asta? And I was like, from a guy like him? No, your attitude's a lot like ass dorkstas. I know why she does
well, I think
that.
Because she was trying to say Astra, or wait, what's
Asta.
The character? Yeah. I don't know why she said Ash, but I assume she
that's
was trying
the
part to say, I assume it's because she was trying to do Ash, like Asta. What the fuck's his main character's name? I don't know why.
Asta.
Okay, yeah, I keep wanting to call him Astra. like she's trying to say Asta, and then she's like, oh wait, hold on, I need to insult him to show that I don't like him. So
right.
Then she changed.
I have to use the insulting name. But I don't know why she used Ash before those two.
She's referring to like his evil form, which is Ass. And that's like he's made out of dark ash. And if you collect enough of him, then you can get a Poke Flute that will help wake up your sleeping or infatuated Pokemon. But it takes a really long time. You don't really use it enough, so you feel like you just wasted your time.
So you really shouldn't bother doing it, honestly. Like 90% of the item side quests in Pokemon.
Nick, what's Pokemon? What are you talking about? I'm just talking about it.
Anyway, so... So Ringard is like, hey guys, can we get along and stuff? I'm gonna die soon, so when I have friends, what I do, go. Anyway, Noelle's bratty older brother, Solid, is there. He's like,
Nick, it goes far beyond that. This is a new level of douchey elite antagonism in this, because normally they're just like, yeah, look at this peasant who's wandered in here with their shabby clothes and their uncouth lifestyle. This is one who is just like, I'm going to kill everything you love slowly around you, taunt you every step of the way, and then I'm going to break into your room at night and whisper mean things into your ear, hopefully giving you nightmares, and then I'm going to fart in your mouth when I'm done, and I'm gonna laugh when you get pink eye.
He like, tore apart her stuffed rabbit. Like, what kind of psycho is this guy?
The one that flabbergasted me is they were clearly sitting down to eat at presumably a table with their family, and she, I guess, picks up her fork first, and he's not, like, slapping her hand. He slaps her whole dish off the table like, no! You don't eat before me! And I guess her family was just cool with that. Like,
kids will be kids.
It's just like, what? Hold on a moment.
He's ridiculously over the top. And he's still got the same punchable smirk as he did when he was a little kid. I mean, there is one thing, though. Like, this would be insanely over the top and probably would not actually be effective at evoking the emotion it's supposed to, if not for that last image of Noelle as a child crying, and then it fades into her face now, looking at him all determined but nervous. It's a really effective shot.
It is. And also, it's that thing where, you know, we almost kind of joke about how unrealistically kind of cartoonish it is for everyone in the world to hate Asta, but it's somewhat... Somehow it's more acceptable that one person has this attitude towards Noelle, and it's even more overblown, and it's just like, yeah, kind of, you know, go, girl! Like, take him down!
Yeah. So, they have that moment, and, you know, Noelle's like, and Yuno is kind of observing her reaction to all this. In the background, Charmy and Silph are fighting. Thanks, girls, for killing that. Dragging this back into... Yeah, okay, good. The match starts, and immediately Yuno's like, I'll attack. You guys handle support. And I was like, no, I'm attacking. I am! Poor god-ass Ringard is just like, I'll support you guys then. Yay, go team!
Like, did you have to pass a physical for this? I assume not, since we've had two different characters who have clearly shown up not being the person they said they were. But still.
Solid and one of his teammates immediately use combination magic to start flying in from the sky, dive bombing with an attack. Yuno is forced to try to fend them off. Lots of magic clash really quickly. There's a flame magic guy on the other side who attacks with some erupting fire, and Noelle shields them with her sea dragon's lair. Another guy uses sand magic, so it sucks away all the water, which is, that's cool.
I was like, well, hold on a moment. This counters what I was taught in One Piece, that water would beat sand. Plus, Pokemon logic says water beats ground type, so.
Yeah. Yuno is forced to kind of snag the crystal and Noelle and pull them away, and he's like, okay, we're gonna be on the defensive the entire time with this raid, so look, I'm the fastest guy. I'll go for an opening and destroy the crystal. You guys protect the crystal. And Noelle's like, no. Let me be the one to go. And Jeevan's like, please.
Yeah.
And so, Yuno kind of looks at it for a second, and, after they fend off, another couple of attacks, Noelle leaps into the fray, essentially, and, you know, is thinking to himself, she's been fighting alongside Asta, so I bet she can do it. Also, I feel better if I'm the one protecting the crystal instead of these two jokers, so fair enough. But meanwhile, Noelle is thinking to herself as she darts away, is like, okay, so if I'm going this way, then Solly is going to come after me. And so she's kind of splitting the team up. Yuno faces off against, I believe, the sand magic guy. I think that's who that is.
And it looks to be another member of the Golden Dawn.
Yeah, and we get this great little flashback. It's very short, from this guy's perspective, you know, just hearing, a little bit of conversation among the other members of the guild, like, oh yeah, that Yuno guy, yeah, he took down one of the Diamond Eight Shining Generals in his first year in the brigade. When he did, he told the vice captain he was going to be captain of the Golden Dawn. Yeah, when, you know, he's been chosen by the Wind Spirit, it looks like Captain Vengeance has high hopes for him. And so, then we, you know, just this brief little insight into, hey, this guy resents, you know, for getting all this attention and popularity. That's a nice little extra layer into this match.
I wish there was like a moment afterwards as the flashback was fading away where the one dude was just like, you ever think Vengeance is a really stupid name? Hey, I heard that one dude brought in mind control magic and he's controlling the whole Diamond Kingdom. Like, that just cuts out there. It's like, don't you think that's kind of fucked up? Quick. Like, as the dude's like, oh, I'm fighting you, you know. That was some weird stuff.
Yeah,
and
all the Black Bolts were like, yeah, this sounds like a great, not evil plan.
A lot of people are really cool with that. I don't know.
And, you know, there's this cool shot of him, like, summoning what looks to be, like, a freaking golem out of his sand in order to fight against Yuno. So I really like this chapter.
Yeah, I there was less Painty McDeer, dude, which is always a good thing. But no, I like that the action in it was nicely kind of paced. It's not long, but it's a nice sequence that kind of does make everything very visually easy to understand, which is always a satisfying thing.
It's one page, honestly, that gives you a lot of this, and it's done very effectively. So
yeah.
I think the props are deserved for that.
And I also enjoy that this is going to be one that's looking like it's going to evolve a little bit more detail to it. You know, we're going to build into these separate little fights here. I like that it's not just something that's solved immediately, that this conflict between Noelle and her one brother, especially the one who seems to be the most evil of the two, is actually going to be something that's going to get its own, like, focus and everything like that. So I was happy with that. And, you know, by and large, I enjoyed, I'm still not crazy on Yuno, but it's weird. I enjoyed Yuno with Noelle in those moments. Maybe it's just Asta that's my problem. I don't know, but, I'm not crazy on, like, I'm not super excited, like, I can't wait to see this Yuno fight, because I'm definitely looking at that, like, cool, but I'm excited for Noelle and that kind of payoff.
All right, let's move on to finishing up with One Piece. It's, I don't even know what the actual chapter is, because there's all this stuff in the way. Chapter 74, King Bomb. Anyway, before we get into that, The results of the character popularity poll came out, which explains why all these weird characters are on this two-page spread. Because I was thinking to myself, I was looking, I was like, this is a very odd collection of characters to be having together in this two-page spread.
Only one Straw Hat, and then Sabo's there, along with Marco, who I don't think has shown up in, like, 150 chapters.
Cavendish is there, Reiju is there, and Crocodile, and Corazon, and this is strange. But then it turns out it's because of the results of the popularity poll. So essentially, all the super popular characters, aside from the Straw Hats that weren't Luffy, showed up in this two-page spread. And, you know, you start off going through this, it's like, okay, I get these results. I get it. Luffy number one, Zoro number two, Sanji number three, perfect sense. Law number four, okay. Ace number five, Jinbei number six, Chopper 7, Nami 8. Sabo number 9?
I totally get that. Sabo was in that role, in the place where a character would get a lot of popularity by being connected so much with Luffy and Ace.
And he got to look really cool. He has the flame powers now.
Yeah, exactly.
Hancock number 10?
She has always been ranked extremely high. I don't know why. I guess because she's got a...
I guess people really think she's funny, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just kind of weird. It's like she ranked ahead of Robin and some of the other Straw Hats.
what's kind of interesting to me is that a lot of the other Straw Hats, this is just where they rank. You know, it's kind of funny. It's a series that has about 10 main characters in that core group, mm-hmm. and most of those 10, like, well, not most of them. Most of them are in the top 10, but there's like three or four where they're just like, yeah, they're in like the top 20-ish or so.
Yeah,
Frankie is. Number 20 is not a surprise. It's like, I think did a little better this time than I thought he might have.
Usopp at number 15 kind of surprised me a little bit, but
it does. He also, though, I don't think has been a huge character, and
he hasn't been prominent, especially recently. Yeah, the one that gets me is like Cavendish. It's like, come on, guys, Bartolomeo.
Well, he dropped because remember Bartolomeo was actually I think top 10 at the last popularity poll, the one they did during Dressrosa. So it's surprising for me that the one I think that blows me away is Reiju at 14. Like, people are apparently loving that character and I guess having like a sympathetic side to the Sanji family, but that blows me away that she's like that high on there.
And then tied with Frankie is freaking Marco the Phoenix. Okay.
Again, like, it's a character with cool powers, it's relevant and stuff, so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole bunch more results on there. Carrot's actually pretty high on this list. He's like 26.
Cat Viper? I mean, I love Cat Viper, but he's 30th?
That's pretty fucking high.
That's he's higher than Gold Rogers! How did this do that? Also,
Vivi's still fairly high up there, too.
Perona's pretty high on there. It's kind of... Mm-hmm. Shirahoshi at 31. Go fuck yourself. Sorry. I'm not...
She did nothing. We also got the American results from this. Luffy, Zoro, and Sanji are the numbers 1 through 3. Brook is number 4!
That's the really surprising thing about this, because I was actually...
America!
I was about to tweet something out about, like, contrary to the other polls, I guess we're not going to have any, like, Sui over here, where it's just one character in America is obscenely popular, but that is Brook, like, going from, what, 19th or something like that?
19th up to 4th, yeah.
Is pretty big, and... I guess it makes sense. I think maybe fits Americans' sense of humor a little bit more.
Now, if you want to have the actual like surprise for that, it would probably be Carrot. She's number 11 in the English results.
I mean after you explained that Suyu was or Asui was number 4 or 3 or whatever,
she's
it makes
girl,
yeah,
I guess.
She you got to get that furry connection in there. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Anyway. Marco's like number 17 on this poll. What the fuck?
Nick, you don't understand. These people like the cool characters, and it doesn't matter if they haven't appeared in like 6 years. They love them, all right?
Who is Hawkins?
Basil Hawkins. He's the guy with the voodoo powers, like the one that turns him into like a voodoo doll. He was one of the supernovas. He's like really tall, blonde hair. He has like a sword.
That makes even less sense to me than Marco him being on there.
I liked Hawkins. I thought he was pretty cool. I would have voted for him. All right.
Okay.
Pretty cool. Luigi Taunt from Super Smash Brothers.
Which one?
Well, the good one. The one where he kicks the ground.
Oh,
the classic one, yeah.
The one that spikes you, right?
Yep.
Anyhow, Big Mom has caught up essentially with the Straw Hats, who are trying to escape on King Mom. She's trying to get them. She swings her sword through the air and sends out a shockwave that blows away like a quarter of King Bomb's body. It's quite harrowing, honestly. Just like, also sends the shockwave out into the ocean. So King Bomb is still running away, and she's like, "Please have mercy! I'm being threatened." So, King Bomb, listen, that girl earlier, who was that? Your girlfriend. And King Bomb says, "Oh yes, Lady Tree, she's unsafe." That's so stupid.
I applaud the translation because I know it probably isn't easy to come up with a pun like that, and it's beautifully perfect. But my soul. Like, I lost a piece of my soul when I read that. I love it, but I'm like, I was so hateful for that moment. I was like,
But Nami used that to twist King Bomb and manipulate him. He's like, you know, that means you've got a reason to live. And King Bomb's like, yeah, I can't die. Hammer keeps running even faster. And Paige was like, Jesus Christ, this woman's scary.
I love that they, like, keep referring to the fact that, like, she's just, like, this cruel temptress of Nami who just manipulates people. And I love that they're, like, they're giving me this emotional moment with fucking Tree Bomb, the giant tree man thing.
Luffy is like, I know, I'll punch her to stop her from attacking us some more. But Nami's like, wait a second, Luffy, I've got a plan. And she takes out her Climatact and sends out a series of tiny thunderclouds, and she's, and the freaking, the thundercloud is like, ooh,
says, a piece of candy.
Lightning, ooh, all those candy. Other lightning just goes, and just goes off. Fucking Big Mom tumbles to the ground.
Yeah, like she like, goes for the attack, and the king's like, ooh, I'm gonna follow this. And just turn like, bam.
Ooh, yummy. Primi's like, what the fuck are you doing?
The pirate hat, like, has this look of two, like, you fucked up, you stupid ass cloud.
Just, I love this side of him in the back. What are you doing? So you're just like, oh, you're so good.
And, yeah, people in the chat are mentioning it. It makes sense. It's, Zeus and all these things are part of Big Mom's soul. So it would make sense that they're, like, obsessed with eating and two in their own way. So it all fits.
They're very selfish creatures, so now we just need to know what they like in order to twist them into obeying her commands. And, they head into the seducing woods, and the Nami's like, yeah, we're going to be, like, home free here because he's the king of these woods. We can do it. They start to make a path, and they head through, and everyone's like, yeah, we're going to make it! Yay! And so they're like, huh, what was that thing anyway? And Jinbei's like, ah, that was a cloud created from Mama's soul. And Zeus shows up and like, hi, I'm Zeus!
Shut up! You got any more of them lightning ball things?
You got any, you got more thunderclouds?
You got any more of that not having to read Prince of Tennis over there? Then get...
So, yeah, and Nami's like, hey, so, yeah, I guess you like those black balls. Yeah, they were delicious. I love them. Hey, I get more. Can I have some more? And Luffy's just like, hey, forget about that. Give us a ride. I want to be Goku. And Zeus is like, oh, no, that actually won't work because only Mama can ride me because she gave me her soul. Makes sense. You know, there's that connection between them. So Nami instead says, all right then, Zeus, will you be my servant? And she's like, will you be my servant? And Sanji's like, I will! Oh, Sanji, you just came out of having that very emotional character development arc, and now you're just right back to being that same old horn dog. I guess he wouldn't be you. But Zeus is like, well, yeah, if you give me more of those black bulls, then sure, fine. And she tells him to, she points out, like, hey, you know, you were able to completely cover the sky earlier, so that was really cool. So you should do that for me. Big Mom is really pissed off. She yells out at the seducing woods to stop the Straw Hats, and they start to turn all evil and sinister and go after them. And they're like, oh, we can, like, Sanji says, we can just smash them and keep on going forward. And Luffy says something kind of, like, smart. Like, he remembered a thing, amazingly, which is, no, see, if you'll lose sight of all direction as you fight, so that won't work if we try and do this, because they toy with your mind.
I'm not positive that's Luffy. I think that might actually be Carrot.
It might be Carrot, you're right.
I just wanted to take that away from Luffy. He can't think he's smart.
Can't be smart. So they're like, okay, well, and meanwhile, King Bomb was like, I have more tree puns! they cannot disobey an order from the queen on the other branch.
You know, I was legitimately about to be like, here's some real compliments to the translation team for One Piece, because just a small touch, like, instead of him saying on the other hand to on the other branch is brilliant. I completely fucking missed they disobey, and I'm taking away that compliment retroactively.
So,
fuck, man, Disoak Bay is brutal.
Meanwhile, Prometheus is really pissed off now. Mm-hmm. I mean, so the sun falls from the sky, basically, on top of a tree. Well, okay. I'm sure he's fine. It's One Piece, he'll be okay. But the Straw Hats have had to abandon their ride as a result of this. As we cut away back to the capital, as a bunch of Mama's crew are making plans, Brulé has brought a bunch of people into the mirror world. They're detailing updates to each other. They've got a patrol out at sea, under the sea, and all this stuff. And Katakuri is, you know, kind of leading all of this stuff, coordinating everything, it seems as though. And they're like, okay, look, guys, you know, someone raises the question, you know, Mama's going after them herself, so that should mean that they absolutely cannot get away. So why are we waiting for them over here, too? And Kai Curry is kind of like, just in case. He can see the future, so.
They also note, I forget which one of her people it is, but there's one of the sons that's talking about, like, what the kind of setup's going to be, and you can see, talking about the first line of security, we can see Baron Tamago in that group there, too. So
yeah.
It's possible we might still see some of those, like, big fights happening here where certain characters...
It's possible, yeah. That's it. They might have to fight their way up.
We got teases before of, like, Baron Tamago fighting, like, Pedro, I think, and maybe we'll see a full fight kind of happen.
Also, they have tart tanks.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
We cut over to the other side of the island where Bage is, you know, still racing away with his tank treads, but Pudding catches up to him on her magic carpet, and Bage is like, you think that I'll spare any mercy for little girls? And Pudding's just like, look, I need to talk to Chiffon, so let me talk to her. And she kind of talks to Chiffon inside of Bage's fortress, and she's like, I know what's going on, you know, Mama's having her hunger pangs, so you need me to make a chiffon cake, right? But no, I'm gonna leave this place. I'm getting out of here. So I'm not gonna obey you. And Bae's like, yeah, so get lost. And but he's like, no, listen, the real reason I'm doing this isn't for Mama or for the sake of the country. We have to stop Mama before she kills him and all of his friends! So, Pudding turned into the love-struck girl. Doop-a-doop-a-doop.
That's the thing. Potentially, Pudding might just be pretending and acting that way to appeal to sort of like the side of Chiffon that cares about that. Like, she knows would care about that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. She could be manipulative. We've noted, like, that's been noted as being what she's good at, being a good actor and being manipulative. But I feel we're probably going to get the other example of it. And look, you know, the time to, we knew this was going to be probably where this is going to go. I think the only really redeeming part is if we do get that level of, like, connection.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Winsleydale Cheddar in the chat said, you know, now that King Bomb's dead, I guess Lady Tree's going to have to try timber.
They've been doing it all, like, the entire review, just nothing but shitty tree puns. I've been ignoring them.
Would you stop?
You know, I I'm still kind of holding out for the idea that maybe we just get a connection between Big Mom and Pudding, like there's some kind of reconciliation between them, but I don't know. But, it seems like it could go one way, but maybe, hold out hope that maybe, she's playing an act and it's just her way of finding, you know, getting what she needs.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just gonna have to be a time will tell type of thing. Pudding did maintain an act like this for a much longer time the first time around. So who knows? But that's going to do it for Week Manga Recap this week. So we are going to, I guess, close off with our favorites. And yeah. What do you think?
Ooh. Let me start with character first, because I haven't considered series all the way yet. I'm going to give my character of the week to King Bomb, because I felt myself getting a little bit sad when he got crushed by the sun. And even Luffy has a moment where he just turns back and he's like, TREE! Because again, Luffy just doesn't learn names of anything. But he still had enough to be sad that the tree got crushed by the sun. So I like that scene.
I'm going to go with Black Clover. I thought that it was an effective chapter all the way through. You know, emotional stuff with Noelle. And even just that extra little detail with, Yuno's one-sided rival coming in to challenge him. So, that's gonna do it for me. Dr. Stone has, won the, chat poll this week, I should note.
I'm trying to think through all the chapters again, and in doing so, I think I will agree and go with Dr. Stone. Just, it wasn't like a crazy good chapter per se. But I think it was a really effective chapter. This is a weird week where there's nothing that's like crazy great, but there's also nothing that's bad either. I think every chapter was good. So it's just tough trying to pick one that was like the one to go with. And I think I will go with Dr. Stone just as the one I enjoyed the most.
I get that. I'm going to go with, this is actually kind of the hard part for me on the other hand. but I think I'm going to go with Kohaku from Dr. Stone. I think that she just her moments of providing that, you know, extra little bit of deadpan delivery and the interaction she also had with Chrome were just really funny. So that's going to do it. All right. So with that said, we are going to wrap things up here. Thank you guys for joining us for a weekly manga recap. We record the show on smashcast.tv/RelloT and twitch.tv/RelloT, usually around 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday evenings. But sometimes we need to change things up, so to stay updated on that stuff, you can follow us on social media at WMR Podcast. We'll tweet out whenever the show is starting, and you can also follow your hosts at RelloT and at YRuler of Time. Be sure to check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com or on our YouTube channel or on iTunes. And if it's a Slayer 2, be sure to leave a comment, rating, subscription, all that stuff. If you do it on iTunes, then it helps us to beat the Woodworking Podcast and become the king of the hobby section.
That's my dream. It's literally like if I became a One Piece character and I was on the boat, they'd be like, "What's your dream, Chris?" Or I guess I need to whack your name. So I'm like, Chris Casticus. It's a long name, but I like it. And they're like, "Chris Casticus, what's your dream?" And I'm like, "To beat the woodworkers and be the best hobby podcasts."
Like, and people, what's a podcast?
Everyone's like, "What's a podcast?" I'm like, "Oh, well, it's a thing I use to discuss manga." They're like, "What's a manga?" I'm like, "Well, that's what you all are. You're a fictional world." And I break the reality. Like, like everyone's head explodes, and I'm just like, "Oh, shucks."
Be sure to send criticism, feedback, questions, suggestions to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. That is the best place for us to keep track of all of it, process the feedback, have questions available for our Q&A episodes, take suggestions for future manga for us to read. Special thanks go out to our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy.
Yes, it is all greatly appreciated. Also, a special thanks to Red Bane. You know what? It's what it says. Red Bane, a.k.a. Dr. Manga, a.k.a. William Garland, a.k.a. William Gallagher. That's his entire username. So,
wow.
It's like four separate lines here. So special thanks to Red Bane and his various subtitles and nicknames for being our newest patron. Kaboosh is greatly appreciated. I don't know yet what we're going to be doing for next week. There's no jump. So, I don't know if we've decided yet if there's going to be the fill-in thing.
I don't know if we can stretch out Akunohana for
Olmec. It'll be Akunohana and maybe Seven Deadly Sins.
Maybe just have an hour-long episode. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Well, we'll let you know on that. We'll keep you updated. But by the way, Nick, right. I'm doing some research for something, and in that process, I had to I'm rereading some portions of Fairy Tail. I recently reread through portions of the Erasion 6 arc. I forgot that in addition to having the magic to slow everything down around him, Racer also had motorcycle summoning magic. And I can't comprehend as it happened, I was like, I know I've read this before, but this is I don't understand this. Why would he have this if his magic is to slow things down around him? I sat there, he has the magic ability to summon motorcycles and parts of motorcycles too, because at one point he just summons tires to come at Gray. This dude had two magics he focused on. He's like, I want to be faster than everyone else, so I need a magic to slow down the rest of the world and a magic to summon motorcycles. And then him and Ray just have a motorcycle race for a little bit. Holy shit, the things you forget and you find on re-read-throughs is incredible at times.
I don't think we can top that at all. Thank you, Steve, man. Thank you, Miss Planet. Bye, everybody.
Bye.